Chapter 8. Closing the Deal. Title Searches. Conducting a title search prior to transfer of real estate property involves searching for every available record or document that relates to present and prior ownership of the property in question, with the goal of clearly defining the current status of the property title. In layman's terms, we want to be sure that the property being sold truly and completely belongs to the seller, and that he or she has the legal right to transfer ownership of the property. We also want to be sure that they can transfer title to our buyer free and clear of any liens, judgments, or back taxes. Records searched will include public and court records, property tax records, deeds, mortgages, wills, judgments, divorce decrees, liens, claims, and other legal proceedings or findings. Any defects found in the title to the property will have to be cleared or otherwise dealt with prior to transferring ownership. Some may ask, if title has been searched and cleared prior to the sale of a property, then why is there a need for title insurance? Well, even the most thorough title search may fail to find certain risks, which, due to their nature, are hidden and not necessarily documented. These could include such situations as errors in property boundaries due to inaccurate surveys, claims made by missing or unknown heirs, mistakes in probating or interpreting previous wills, legal documents executed under fraudulent power or attorney, clerical errors in recording legal documents, false impersonations and/or forgeries, claims not documented in the public or court records. Hidden risks such as these make title insurance a necessary and wise one-time investment. If at some future time a claim is made against your property due to one of these hidden risks, your title insurance policy will cover the costs of a legal defense. If the claim is upheld by the court, the policy will reimburse you for all or part of the actual loss, depending on the value of the property. The attorney or title company closing your transaction will handle the title search, but you can also perform one as well if you want. Of course, your attorney or title company will not accept your search to close your property, but you can get an idea if there are any encumbrances on the property. You would only do this as a preliminary action to see if you can buy the property and clear the liens. In a typical real estate transaction, if you are paying cash, then you will buy title insurance for yourself. If you are funding the closing with a lender, the closing agent will provide a lender's policy and offer you a policy for an additional fee. The fee is usually at a discount since they already have a lender buying a policy also. The reason they offer you a policy is because the one the lender buys only covers the loan and loan amount. You need one to cover you and your purchase price. Don't worry too much about title searches and insurance, as the closing attorney or title company will take care of all of that for you. Always use your own attorney. It's always important to use your own attorney or title company in a real estate closing. Attorneys play several key roles in real estate. Having a good one of your own can make a big difference how smoothly things go, how much you avoid losing, and how profitable your ventures are. Some of your buyers will want to use their own attorney or title company. Avoid this at all costs if you can. The role of an attorney or title company in real estate investing. Some states use attorneys and some states use title companies to handle real estate closings. The most common role of attorneys or title companies in real estate are handling closings. They can also do title work, review contracts, manage escrow and earnest money deposits, help negotiate when issues arise, and can be great sources of referrals and leads. As a retail home buyer, new investor, and when investing in a new area or niche, the seller or their agent will often propose their own attorney or law firm to handle things. That attorney won't be on your side, meaning disputes over escrow funds, return of deposits, and other provisions of your purchase contract may not go your way. It can be a battle, and you'll be going up against a law firm that is looking out for the interests of the other party. We had a deal this month that we had to actually close on and then resell the property. We couldn't assign the contract. There were a few days between the closing of us buying it and selling it. Our buyer insisted on using their attorney. When we purchased the property, we had to pay off a $3,200 HOA lien. When we sold the property, because the same attorney didn't handle the closing, our buyer's attorney held back $3,200 of our money because the lien hadn't been released yet. As soon as they receive verification that it has been paid, then they will release our $3,200. Had we been able to use our own attorney, who just a few days prior had paid that lien from our closing, this would not have been a problem, and we would have our money already. Things are far easier when the money and transaction is under the control of your own legal team. Choosing a good attorney. It's crucial to find a good attorney you can trust. Some tips for doing that include asking other investors for referrals, has a good reputation within the legal industry, interviewing them by using them for one closing and see how it goes, looking at the best balance of rates versus value, and selecting one which specializes in working with investors. Creative ways to structure and close deals. There are many ways to structure, close, and fund a deal. You will probably not use all of these, but it is good to know all of the ways so you simply will have more tools in your toolbox and not miss a deal when it comes along. Assignment of contract. The first and easiest way is to do an assignment. I have enclosed my simple assignment form in this course for you to use. You will not be able to do an assignment on every deal. Some sellers, especially banks or lenders, and most realtors, will not allow you to put an assignment clause in the contract. A lot of wholesalers use this method so they do not have to pay two sets of closing costs or come up with financing for the property. In an assignment, you do not buy and sell the property, but you simply assign your existing contract to another person who is stepping into your shoes and completes the contract. So whatever terms you negotiated with the seller, then the person you assign to has to abide by those terms as well. The great thing about doing assignments is that the only money you have at risk is your deposit. That's it. You do not have to close or worry about having the money to close. And the best part is, whatever your assignment fee is, that is how much you will make net. In other words, your buyer and seller, depending on what is in the contract, will pay all of the closing costs. An assignment fee can be anywhere from $500 to $50,000 or more. Most day traders that I know try to make between $5,000 and $10,000. We, however, try to make $15,000 or more. You do have to be careful, as your buyer and seller are going to see how much you are making. If you are making too much, they may object and refuse to sign. You can avoid this by doing a double close. In other words, you buy the property and then 30 minutes later, you sell it. Yes, you will have to pay some closing costs, but at least you will not have to worry about your buyer or seller refusing to sign because you are making too much. I have included my simple assignment for you to use on page 125 and in the forms. You will just need to edit it and include your company information. As with any form or document, please have your own local attorney look it over before using it. Assignment of beneficial interest using a trust. This is a way to assign a non-assignable contract. If your realtor or seller will not let you assign the contract, and you know this in advance, you can create a trust with you being the beneficiary, and then you assign the beneficial interests in the trust. The name stays the same on the contract, but you have to list the buyer in the contract as the trust. This course is not a course on trusts or asset protection, but using this method is a great way to assign a non-assignable contract. There are three parts to a trust: the trust document, the trustee, and the beneficiary, who is also the person who owns the trust. When you create the trust, which is very simple, list yourself as the beneficiary. Then, once you have a buyer for the property, you agree to sell your beneficial interest in the trust for the amount that would normally be your assignment fee. In the end, there is one real estate closing and one personal property closing, which is you selling the beneficial interest in the trust. Create an LLC and sell the shares. This way is very similar to the trust method, but instead of creating a trust and selling the beneficial interest, you create a new LLC, and the LLC gets a property user contract. Then, once you find a buyer, you simply enter into an agreement to sell your LLC membership shares for the amount that would be your assignment fee. Once again, there is only one real estate transaction and one personal property transaction, which is the selling of the shares. This is also a roundabout way to assign a non-assignable contract. Subject to. This is where you buy a property with the existing financing in place and continue making payments on the seller's mortgage. I am not a big fan of this method and rarely use it. The reason I am not a big fan is that anyone can get a property subject to by simply talking the seller into deeding the property to you, and then you will continue to make payments. I have seen many new investors who focused on getting the deed and then either couldn't sell the property or couldn't find a tenant and had to go back to the seller and give them their property back. Many states have enacted laws to protect consumers against investors who buy a property subject to. Make sure to check your state's local laws regarding this or any other type of transaction. If I ever use this method, I only use it in day trading. I get the property under contract subject to the existing mortgage, then I find a buyer with a down payment and assign my contract to them, and I am out of the deal. It is like being able to offer financing on the property, and I just collect the down payment. As previously mentioned, I do not typically use this method, but it is a way to day trade another deal. The best way to use this method, which I have started doing recently, is to find a local investor that specializes in subject to deals, and when you get a lead, you give it to them, and if they get the deal, they split the down payment with you. Options. Options are another way to close a transaction. In an option, you really do not have a contract on the property, but an option to buy the property at a certain price and for a certain length of time. The money you give the seller as option money is non-refundable, as it is the price you are paying for the option itself. You can then decide if you want to exercise the option or not. That is up to you. The good news is, if you do not have your option sold to a buyer who will actually close on buying the property, then you can simply let the option expire. In this type of transaction, you also will not need any more cash than the price of the option. But remember, the option money is non-refundable, so you can't get it back either way. The number of sellers you can use an option with is limited. Most realtors do not want to submit options, as they want an actual contract on the property and do not want to have to take the property off the market during the option period. The best types of properties or sellers to use an option with are for sale by owners. I have included two option agreements for you on pages 127 through 130, as well as the digital copy in the forms. The first one is a standard option agreement, and the second one is what we call a flex option. A flex option allows you to get a property under contract, then put your buyer and seller together, and you receive an option release fee at the closing. It is best used when working with other wholesalers as the seller. Seller financing. This is a great technique to use when you just cannot get the seller to agree to your price. If you are too far apart on price, then I always ask if they would consider selling their property with seller financing. You can always pay more if you are getting seller financing. I recently had a deal that I needed to be paying $66,000, and the seller was stuck on $82,000. I asked if they would consider seller financing, and they agreed. We signed a contract stating that we would pay $82,000 with 100% owner financing for 20 years at 5% interest. The best part was that the payments didn't start until after 90 days. We sold the property for $99,900 with $18,000 down, and our buyer assumed the loan. This was a win-win transaction. I have included in this course a live recording of me negotiating a seller financing transaction, so you will know how to present this to a prospective seller. Simultaneous or double closing. Using a double close can be extremely beneficial for real estate wholesalers. What are they? How do you do it? Well, a double closing is two back-to-back real estate closings, A to B and B to C. That's the seller to you, then you to your end buyer. Your buyer will fund your purchase. You are closing in your name, but you do not have to bring any funds to the closing. Not every attorney or title company will allow you to do a simultaneous closing. You will just have to ask your attorney or title company if they do these types of transactions. They will know what you are talking about. You can ask fellow investors at your investors club meeting or the leaders of the club which attorney or title company will do a double closing. This is in contrast to simply assigning your contract to an end buyer and earning an assignment fee. Double closings typically still happen the same day. Why double close? Contract assignments or flipping contracts work very well, yet there can be scenarios in which a double close works better. Sometimes end buyers and sellers can get cold feet or try to cut you out of the deal, especially when you are making a lot on the deal. The seller may see the big assignment fee and figure they can sell for more if they back out and try to work right with your buyer. The buyer may also notice the spread and figure they can get the property even cheaper if they go behind your back. Of course, it doesn't always work out for those that try that. Legally, they may still be bound to pay you compensation for what you should have earned or for your loss of profit and investment. Obviously, you want to avoid those issues if at all possible. With a double close, you buy and close on the property, then turn around and sell it right away with a separate contract to your buyer. There's no need for either party to know what the other's sales or purchase price was. They can find out eventually from public record, but that won't show up for a while. Some confuse double closing with meaning they have to come up with all the cash to buy the property and then hold indefinitely until they can find a buyer. It doesn't have to work like that. Once you have the property on your radar, you can begin marketing the opportunity to your list. You can finalize the sale to them within just hours of closing on your purchase. They can use cash, have been lining up conventional financing, or take advantage of seller financing if you are offering it. You can also use private or transactional funding to finance 100% of your purchase transaction. You will have to consider dealing with two sets of closing costs, yet it can be more appealing and profitable than many think at first. This is also a good backup strategy in case you run into sellers with good deals but who refuse to allow an assignment clause in the contract. Physically closing. This last way is where you actually buy and fund the property either with cash or financing. This is the most expensive as you are also paying two sets of closing costs, just like in a simultaneous closing. With this method, you need to have your funding lined up in advance so you can close regardless of what happens to your buyer. Remember that even though you are closing and buying the property, you don't have to use your money, as you will see next. Financial Partner Strategy. Another way is to list the buyer on the contract in the name of your name and financial partner. For example, Larry Goins and financial partner. It's almost like doing an assignment, but your buyer or private lender is already on the contract. Your buyer or lender, private money, will just step into your shoes and close the deal. The only part you will need to work out is how you will get paid. If your buyer is either paying cash or is using private money or hard money, then you can be listed on the HUD closing statement as an assignment fee. I haven't personally used this method, but I have a student that has, so I wanted to pass it along in this update of the course. Co-wholesaling. Co-wholesaling is one of the lesser-known real estate strategies. It also is one of the most exciting, especially for newer wholesalers. As the name suggests, co-wholesaling is a joint effort between two investors or entities who work together to wholesale a property or properties. This strategy can be used to get difficult deals done, save a deal you are about to lose, open up new doors to inventory and deal flow, and scale your income. Use co-wholesaling to find more property deals fast and with less effort. To sell the deals you get under contract quickly and for more money. Keep in your zone, area of strength and specialty, and doing your favorite tasks. Keeping income consistent as markets change and shift. And for more easily diversifying into new areas. How co-wholesaling works. There are two main investor parties involved in a co-wholesale situation. One, the one who finds the property, and two, the one who sells the property. It can be a 50-50 split if two of you are partnering together in the same tasks, but generally, one investor has access to the inventory, the other is good at bringing the buyers. As the contracted buyer, if you have already been prospecting for deals and are finding them, then this is you. If you are having trouble funding those deals, getting them closed on time, or finding buyers as fast as you'd like, or on the terms at the price you wanted to, then co-wholesaling may help. Bringing in a co-wholesaler who has buyers, a good database, or influence to attract qualified buyers to your deals can complete your transaction. This can be a one-time thing, or you can just focus on what you are good at and make it a regular arrangement. Other investors will find themselves on the opposite side of the equation. You may have a good buyers list already. You may know buyers, or at least have a good audience that may be ripe for being introduced to these opportunities, but you need inventory. Instead of competing with other wholesalers and depleting both of your resources doing the same thing, what if you work together? Let them find and sign up the deals. You present to your list and share in the profits. Finding co-wholesaling partners. A few investors may already be aware of this type of arrangement and may make great partners. They already know how to do it. You just hit the ground running. In other cases, you might turn someone on to the idea who isn't even investing yet, but has the right resources. For example, someone connected to the real estate industry or who has databases of qualified buyers or leads to distressed property owners or just a large social media following. A faster way to juice your deal flow and finances can be to look for other investors who already appear to be out there doing it. For example, contacting other existing wholesalers buying properties or those advertising investment homes for sale. Offer to help them sell or provide them with inventory. Always, always, always use a co-wholesaler JV agreement. Get your arrangement on paper so the terms and details are clear. You are legally covered and there is no confusion over profit splits. I have included on page 134 and in the forms a copy of a wholesaling agreement. Memorandum of Interest. Recording a memorandum of interest can be an invaluable legal tool for protecting investors and their real estate deals and profits. One of the big concerns of real estate investors, especially wholesalers, is that their deals will be stolen and they'll lose out. This typically happens when a seller decides they want more money and tries to back out to sell to someone else, list it with an agent, or your buyer and the seller try to cut you out of the deal and work directly together. Unfortunately, this can happen too often. It's not just about losing the profit on a single deal either. It is about the loss of all the time and effort and investment put into getting that far into the deal too. It is also about preserving your position and the business. If you are cut out of a deal and have a legal purchase and sales contract, you could technically sue the other parties for breach of contract or other similar causes and compensation, though that can get messy, costly, time-consuming, and may bring up some controversial feelings for some investors. A memorandum of interest, also referred to as a memorandum of contract or MOC, or notice of interest, NOI, is an official document in which the seller acknowledges the purchase and sales agreement and can be used as further legal protection to keep that deal secure. This is easy to get signed as part of the contract when the purchase and sales agreement is being finalized. It can also be recorded in public record as proof and public notice of the pending transaction and your interest in the property. Some attorneys require the seller to sign and others do not. We use an attorney that does not require a seller's signature. Either way, once it is recorded, it becomes a cloud on the title and the seller cannot sell until it is removed by you or your attorney. It is a very basic document that documents the property address, parties involved, and references the contract you have in place, as well as any possible monetary interest already given, i.e. earnest money deposit. This can be taken to the county clerk's office and recorded. That attaches to the property. So when a title search is performed or someone attempts to obtain title insurance for a new purchase or refinance, it will show up, just as if it was a mortgage or lien on the property. Insurers, lenders, and buyers are going to want that cloud on the title removed. In fact, they will not be able to purchase or refinance until it is cleared. In order for that to happen, the attorney or title company involved in a closing will have to contact you and obtain a written and notarized release, quitclaim deed, or other form of waiver. Of course, you are not going to provide that unless you get paid. Once you have this recorded, you may even hope they go around you, because then getting paid can be even easier. They will have to send you a check in advance, or you can get paid directly in funds from the closing. Just make sure you have your contact details clearly listed so that you are easy to find. I have included a copy of mine on page 136 and with the forms as well.